T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Ryan Recker, Overnight America, and time for...
Tell me something good.
Good to hear from you here. All right, so I guess our texting wasn't refreshing on my screen, so I see a couple of text messages coming in here. If you got something good you'd like to share, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. See a couple of text messages here. Tina messages in, my husband is 21 years older, makes no difference. We've been together 23 years. Oh, that's awesome. See, that's good. I think as long as you're on the same page, that changes things, you know? There's some dynamics. One person said, nice job on that call. Hey, Ryan, Dick Van Dyke is in his 90s and married to a gal in her 50s, happily. What do you think? Yeah, like I said, it's, you know, it works for some people. That's the celebrity aspect of it. Normally, you see some sort of, you know, one person might be in a power of position. Sometimes you see that. One person might be a celebrity in this case, or, you know, have a lot of money or rich or whatever. So sometimes you see those type of dynamics play out where you see some of these imbalances, but, you know, it's not always like that. This is mostly, it's pretty rare, I think, when you see a big age gap and there's not some sort of other explanation where you'd look at that and say, oh, yeah, that's it. So good for you, Tina, man. I'm glad you texted that in. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I got a couple of good stories for you. Here's one I've been meaning to get to. It's been a couple of days, but this is from KMOV, and St. Charles pointed it out, or in St. Charles. There's a biking accident that happened to Don McKinney of St. Charles, paralyzed during the summer of 2017, took a trip out to Colorado for vacation, spent time in rehab at the ICU, specializing in spinal cord injuries. He uses an electric wheelchair to navigate around his home, but his goal is to walk again. And the story is, the guy is not stopping, and you can't stop someone that has the will to do whatever they want. And in this case, I 100% believe that if Don sets his mind and continues to work towards that, he is one of those guys that'll find a way to make it happen. And he has a spinal cord injury. You find out that the people that work hard and they try, and they're just something special that gets activated and they do the impossible. And you know what, Don? I think you can. So the article is kind of sad in a way. I guess it's not a tell me something good necessarily, but it's kind of sad that the equipment he needed in order to continue his therapy, his functional electrostimulation in a bike to do that, is $29,000. It's insane. Some of this medical equipment costs. It's just incredibly insane. But he was denied through his insurance company. This is something that is necessary. It's medical equipment he needs in order to continue with his rehab. After the denial, he pleaded his case to an independent review board. The board determined that the denial of the request should be overturned. And KMOV found out, they're supposed to get this piece of equipment for Don, but they haven't ordered it yet. Month went by, and he's just there twiddling, waiting to get his piece of equipment. And his benefits statement showed up. They only put $12 towards this $29,000 piece of equipment. That's when he called News 4 KMOV. I'll tell you, when the news cameras show up, that's a good way to get something done. If there is an injustice or something that is taking way too long to happen, finally, there was some resolve there. They ordered the equipment. It was on his way, and he's on there to start making a miracle for himself there. Don, I know you can do it, man. I know you can. And keep fighting the good fight. I thought that was kind of a good story. Here's another good story. This is a weird tell-me-something-good stories here. Maybe it would be better if you shared yours at 800-925-1120, or if you just wanted to call in at 314-436-7900. President Trump greeted Clemson players at the White House with what he called a great American fast food spread. The only way I can describe this is they're in the White House. Everything's fancy. They got the big drapes, the big tables, the nice carpeting. They have everything on the White House, like silverware is out, and they got the platters, and they got all these other things that are all around them. And on these are boxes of burgers from fast food places, McDonald's and Wendy's. According to the Washington Post, Josh Dossie, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, explained that much of the resident staff at the White House is furloughed, so the president is personally paying for the event to be catered with some of everyone's favorite fast food. So the president, okay. Yeah, you know, he's not going to go out there and cook it for himself or whatever it is. I guess he could have paid for a big caterer to come in. But instead, you're a college kid and you worked hard. You made it to the top. He brings in everyone's favorite McDonald's and Wendy's. I got to tell you, the kid inside me looked at that and said, that is so awesome. It was like that movie in the 90s. Macaulay Culkin did the Richie Rich, and he had a McDonald's inside of his house. Great branding, great product placement for McDonald's or whatever it was, but it made every kid wonder, oh, wouldn't that be great to have a McDonald's in your house? Well, when you're the president of the United States, you can have it whenever you want, right? Here's a couple of clips from that.
So we bought 1,000 Burger King All-America companies, Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's. We have Big Macs, we have quarter pounders with cheese, we have everything that I like that you like.
I love this so much. I just think it's amazing. So he gets Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's all on the same.
We have Big Macs, we have quarter pounders with cheese, we have everything that I like that you like. And I know no matter what we did, there's nothing you can have that's better than that, right?
Okay. Here's what they did. It said the pool, the White House press pool, was ushered into the dining room about 5:50 p.m. when they saw President Trump standing behind a table piled high with burgers from McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King. He explained the great American food to the football players. The pooler asked him which restaurant is his favorite, and he said he liked them all. If it's American, I like it. It's all American stuff, said Trump. Another table in back was covered with Domino's pizza and fries. So the Clemson players came in, and the White House band started playing a jazz rendition of Michael Jackson's classic Billie Jean. They have the candles out and everything. Everything looks so fancy. Oh, my goodness.
Or do I go out, Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott, do I go out and send out for about 1,000 hamburgers, Big Macs?
He goes out. These are big dudes. These guys like to eat. They like to eat the fast food like anyone else. They need the calories, whatever it is. He orders 1,000 burgers. I love it. I love it so much. I guess that's the most cost-effective way if you're going to go. But he's getting the good stuff. He's getting the Big Macs. These ain't the dollar menu burgers. He's getting the good stuff. Man, he probably spent 10 grand on fast food there. And I'm looking at these pictures. Oh, this is so cool. I got to do this for my kid someday. He'll go absolutely crazy. Come home and the table's full of burgers. I'd have all the places. I'd have it all. Get some White Castle in there. Oh, I got to get White Castle. Donald's, Wendy's, Burger King. This is the, if I go back to before I hit high school or whatever it was, this is like the dream. You wake up, you go to the White House, you meet the president, and then there it is, all the fast food you've ever wanted to eat. All right, if you got a good story, I'd love to hear it. Really love to hear it. Coming up a little bit later, I wanted to replay this interview with George Magnus if you missed it. What's going to happen between the United States and China? Everyone's wondering because the economy has been up and down, up and down. If the United States and China come up with a deal, it's going to be a huge, huge deal. So I'm going to ask him about that. We'll talk about it coming up on Overnight America KMOX. And Overnight America continues here. And man, I just think that's so funny. I was looking at some of the photos they posted to the White House Clemson dinner, and there's one of President Trump standing in front of the table, and he's got all the fast food in front of him. And it just reminds me of those days when mom's out of town or she can't make it home, and it's dad's turn to cook dinner. Yep, mom's out, dad's cooking dinner tonight, and you look and there he is. All the fast food you can handle. Oh man. You know, there was something that came up over the weekend. I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I always thought, man, this guy would be a shoo-in if he decided to run for office.
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
And we always thought, too, that there is a chance he's a Republican. I don't think he's a Republican per se, but I think that he is someone that would lean right even though it'd be close to center. And he came out with an interview where he was slamming snowflake culture. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't really an interview at all. Apparently, The Rock had to immediately go online and set the record straight because he said that the interview never happened. They never said it. It was 100% false. That if I ever had an issue with someone, a group, a community, or a generation, I'd seek them out, create a dialogue, and try to do my best to understand them. Criticizing ain't my style. That's not The Rock's style, man. He's talking third person. So The Rock was out doing his thing. He actually had to address the fans because it got wildly out of proportion online. People thought, wow, this is not like The Rock. He's normally someone that's pretty positive. It's weird to hear him bring up and try to slam snowflakes and hard work and trying to just have things handed to you on a silver platter.
I can't believe I have to do this again and set the record straight on something, but I'm happy to do it. Earlier today online, an interview dropped with me, apparently it was with me, where I was insulting and criticizing millennials. The interview never took place, never happened, never said any of those words, completely untrue, 100% fabricated. I was quite baffled when I woke up this morning. You know, I've gained such a great trust and equity with all you guys all around the world over the years, and you know it's not a real DJ interview. If I'm ever insulting
DJ,
a group, a generation, or anyone, because that's not me, and it's not who I am, and it's not what we do. So to the millennials, the interview never happened. To the plurals, the baby boomers, the snowflake generation, I don't even know where that term came from, the tequila generation, that's a generation I just started, that's a good one. You want to join it? I always encourage empathy, I encourage growth, but most importantly, I encourage everybody to be exactly who they want to be.
Oh, that's The Rock. Oh, what's not to like about him? He's such a likable dude. If there's anyone more likable, I haven't met him. I've never met The Rock either, but he is someone that's super active on social media. You can message him on Twitter, and he'll actually message you back. Not always, but I messaged him once. It was something stupid. I was like, wonder how many grocery bags he can hold on to at one time or something like that. Everyone's like, I need to grab as many bags as I can from the car to the house. I don't want to minimize the amount of trips. So you end up holding about 20 plastic bags. Well, he responded with an answer, and it was pretty impressive. I can't remember what it is. It doesn't matter. Just the fact that he responded was pretty cool. Oh, here's another one. MSU trustee, Engler's comments on Nassar victims ill-advised. So this is out of Detroit. What a knucklehead. I don't know what this dude was thinking. So John Engler was at one point governor of Michigan. He was governor there when I was younger, when I was living in Michigan. He is now the interim president of the Michigan State University. Great university, large school. Great sports programs, awesome in basketball, improving in football. But they're facing criticism after he came out and, well, let me just read the quote to you and you tell me what you have, what might be an issue with what he said. He said, regarding Nassar, who, as you remember, Larry Nassar, he's the one that was the, not the coach, but he was the therapist or he was the person that was like the doctor that worked with a lot of these gymnasts and ended up, you know, sexually abusing a lot of them, and hundreds came forward. Hundreds came forward. As of right now, 332 people are going to share $425 million, a historic settlement with the university, and there's another $75 million set aside for another 172 that came forward, and they're still investigating. Engler said that the Healing Assistance Fund may be focused on the victims who are not part of the primary settlement, and then they said, regarding the settlement, because there's millions and millions and millions of dollars, you've got people, they are hanging on, and this has been, there are a lot of people who are touched by this, survivors who haven't been in the spotlight, he told the Detroit News on Friday. In some ways, they have been able to deal with this better than the ones who've been in the spotlight, who are still enjoying that moment at times. You know, the awards and recognition. And it's ending. It's almost done. So what do you think he meant by enjoying the spotlight? Do you think that the sexual abuse victims are enjoying that they have to come forward and talk about what happened to them? The ones that were so embarrassed that they hid it for years and sometimes even decades? Do you think this is really enjoyable that they're in the spotlight for something like this? You think they're doing it because they like everyone knowing that they've gone through this traumatic experience in their lives where someone sexually abused them? You think they're just doing it because it's like, oh, it's like a hobby. It's, oh, this is great. Just, I enjoy people knowing who I am for this. No. No. John Engler, they had to put a statement out. Said, John Engler does not speak for the board and does not have a vote. The Board of Trustees has the authority to determine the details of a new fund to assist survivors. It will be discussed at the MSU board meeting scheduled for February of this year. The time the scope of Nassar's damage was partially known, but women were steadily coming forward after some of these other numbers were coming. And maybe they were even floored by the number of 332 people claiming that they were part of this, and there's still 172 more that could have been. Yikes. All right, let's just keep going. I got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. Oh, here's another fake news story. I love pointing out these fake news things. So everyone jumping on Rand Paul's back. Let me read you this text from a Democratic think tank or whatever this may be, some sort of super PAC, and said, oh, the irony. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, one of the fiercest political critics of socialized medicine, will travel to Canada later this month to get hernia surgery. And the Democrats thought, oh, we got him now. Oh, we got him now. He's going up to Canada, and it goes to show you. Oh, my goodness, of course. Of course Rand Paul would go to Canada to get some sort of surgery. Let me read just the one line that Austin Peterson pointed out, and I think this is a pretty great line. Oh, here's another one. Behold, the senator who describes socialized medicine as slavery, Rand Paul, enemy of socialized medicine, will go to Canada for surgery. Okay. Well, the headlines are all flashy. The Democrats are picking up and sharing this sort of thing online. They say, oh, we got Rand Paul. And well, here's the part that they leave out of the article. The bill is being paid for privately since Rand Paul isn't covered under Canada's health care. Obviously, he's not a Canadian citizen. Why does anyone think, number one, that he would be able to get the benefits of medical care in Canada? But number two, it's a private practice, and Rand Paul is paying for this out of pocket. Private practice. Yeah, there's still private practices in Canada. It's not all socialized medicine.
You are fake news.
Yeah, I know. It is fake news. Somehow they leave that sort of thing out of these articles. And the headline's catchy, but the substance is not applicable. So there's Rand Paul getting hassled. You know, this is the same Rand Paul who is a doctor, by the way. And he's the same Rand Paul that goes to these third world countries and will work on these kids that have zero chance of ever seeing an eye surgeon in their lives to try to help them correct certain things in their lives so they can actually live the rest of their life with sight. I mean, he goes and he does these things. He doesn't publicize it. He just goes on these mission trips, and he'll just, one after another, try to help as many kids as he can and people in these villages. He'll do these things, and no one covers this sort of thing. But boy, he goes up to Canada and pays with his own money for hernia surgery, and the whole world goes crazy because they think he's a hypocrite because he's paying for medical surgery, and it happens to be in Canada. Give me a break. You know, come on now. Did you have to? Did you have to? Let's get something else coming up. So George Magnus is joining us. What's going to happen between the United States and China? Is there going to be an agreement in the next 90 days? Is it even possible? They've tried but failed. What would an agreement even look like? We're going to bring on an expert who studies China and their economy. He's also an economist, so he knows what would happen if there was a deal made. His name is George Magnus. He's coming up next on Overnight America KMOX. Joining us now is an associate at the China Center at Oxford University, a new book out called Red Flags, Why Xi's China is in Jeopardy. George Magnus, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So I wanted to talk about the relationship United States and China have before we actually get into what you think might be happening in the next 90 days. So what really led us to this point where we're talking about trade wars and tariffs and the United States and China not getting along when it comes to their policy?
Well, I think a couple of things, you know. The first is I think it's been building over the last several years, actually. So I think there was a time when there was a kind of a thinking, certainly in the U.S. administrations, I mean, many of them, that, you know, if only, you know, the West was open and, you know, generous to China and, you know, included it in, you know, international institutions and so on, that that eventually China might, you know, kind of become a little bit more liberal and become a little bit more open, become like us, basically. And I think probably in the last few years, I think that realization certainly set in that that wasn't going to happen. And it was kind of reinforced, really, by the second thing, which is that when Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, it was obviously, he came to power in the wake of the financial crisis. Obviously, the West had been floored by this, you know, awful economic and financial shock. China, you know, seemed to be riding high and was believed in its own kind of narrative that it was special and that it was on a kind of a path to economic greatness and so on and so forth. And I think that in terms of China's foreign policy and its kind of diplomatic stance, it became a little bit more truculent, a little bit more, you know, feisty. So I think we've just gotten to the stage, and I think President Trump clearly, you know, captured that kind of mood, which is that, you know, China has gotten away with things that, you know, other countries normally wouldn't have gotten away with, and it's time to call it a day. So that's kind of why I think it all came to a head last year, to be honest.
Mm. Well, if you were to look at the two economies as standalone economies, I guess, and you said become like us when it comes to the way that we hope China would progress, and over the years they really didn't go in that direction. So how is the United States economy and the Chinese economy similar and different?
Well, I mean, on the face of it, you know, they couldn't be more different, because the United States obviously has a very, very small state sector. It's a democracy, so there are at least two major political parties, and, you know, China just doesn't work like that. China is a single-party state. They don't have elections for the leadership or for the cadres of the senior echelons of the party. The state plays a very prominent role in the economy and in society. The parallel, if you want to put it like that, is that China has had a very vibrant private sector. So one of the remarkable things about China during the last 30, 35 years has been the dynamism of its private sector. And in fact, there's quite a kind of a row going on within China today between some people who believe that, you know, the private sector has, quote, fulfilled its historic mission, and, you know, now the state really should be in charge of everything, and others who believe that China can only thrive if it has a continued thriving and dynamic private sector. So that's a big issue in China, but it's not true to say that, you know, China is a sort of a communist country in the way that we used to think of the Soviet Union. Because private enterprise and market mechanisms, it's just not the same that we are familiar or comfortable with. But China has got, you know, it does get it, that, that private enterprise is a good thing and can help make the country prosperous and improve people's living standards.
Mm. George Magnus joining us, an author of Red Flags, Why Xi's China is in Jeopardy. And you said that for the last several years they've been working on this and really there hasn't been a lot of progress. So let's say we've been trying to improve relations with China, or let's say we've tried to come up with some sort of ways where our two countries can play nicely with each other. So what is there any way in the next 90 days something actually could happen, or is it just going to be like what we've seen the last couple of decades?
Well, it's, you know, you won't be surprised if I say it's a tough call, because we don't really know what's going on. I mean, the optics seem to be quite reasonable on both sides, and on one level, the kind of mid-level negotiators, well, actually, to be fair, and President Trump himself, have indicated that the negotiations are going reasonably well. On the other hand, people, you know, journalists and people that follow these things and get off the record briefings from participants seem to indicate that on the hard stuff, so on the easy, relatively easy stuff, which is like on, you know, agricultural imports from the United States into China, or energy imports, or tariffs on certain items, and you know, maybe some other things that are strictly speaking trade. That there may, it may well be that there will be something that they will call an agreement, mm-hmm. and that will forestall further any implementation of tariffs which are now in suspension.
Yeah.
But the hard stuff, which is about the transfer of technology, the industrial policy that China runs inside its own country, the protection of intellectual property and the avoidance of plagiarism and theft and so on, these things, and market opening and having majority ownership, these kinds of things which actually American businesses and European businesses have been pitching for, and which are, I think, I gather that they are centerfold in the, or centerpiece in the negotiations, it may not be possible to reach agreement on these things in 90 days or even at all. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to pay close attention to what is said about them and whether there might be, you know, an element to which, you know, the United States may pull back, that China may pull back, may compromise on something that's kind of, that looks okay, but whether it'll actually get to the heart of the matter, we'll have to see. I'd be skeptical about it, to be honest. Mm.
The book Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy, author George Magnus joins us. We're in that 90-day waiting period to see if the United States and China can make some sort of trade deal. Will it happen? What are the roadblocks? What's going to happen if there's a different administration in the next couple of years? Lots of questions still need to be answered. We'll continue our conversation next on Overnight America KMOX. The whole world is watching the United States and China, two of the largest economies. We're also wondering what's going to happen if there is a trade deal struck between the two. You know, that could change a lot. That could give a big, major uptick to both of our economies, but is also something that, historically speaking, hasn't all been productive. So we're going to talk more about that with George Magnus on the U.S.-China trade deal. He's got a new book out called Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy, here on Overnight America. And as much as you watch this and you're closely watching what goes on between the United States and China, what does the United States have to gain here? So let's say there is some sort of agreement made. Maybe it's not to the scale of some of the things you pointed out, like, you know, structural changes or forced technology transfers, or, you know, trying to make it so we're not losing all of our intellectual property, which is a really big deal. A lot of companies are scared about that. Let's say it's not to the grand scale of how it would work ideally. What would a win look like for the United States if they actually did make a deal?
Well, I imagine that ostensibly, I think the most transparent bits, which I think, you know, would grab the headlines and which I'm sure the government would like everybody to be aware of, would be the opportunities for American farmers to sell more to China, for energy producers to sell more to China. there could be some agreement. I mean, the United States and China have agreed these things before, but nothing's actually ever happened about allowing, let's say, credit card companies and financial companies to gain a bigger foothold in the Chinese market, or to be allowed to have majority ownership in joint ventures. I mean, these things, this is one of the things they're certainly talking about, right, and which the United States side is very, very cognizant about, is compliance, right? So if you say something, how do we know that you're going to be following through, and how do we monitor and scrutinize your actions to make sure that you're living up to your agreement? And that, I think, will be something which the United States will certainly be quite keen to follow up, because it's not happened before. I mean, a year ago or more, you know, MasterCard and credit card companies and credit rating agencies were supposed to be, setting foot in China and starting to build businesses there, and nothing's really happened. So, there certainly are upsides for individual groups of, you know, American workers or American sectors that could benefit from the resolution of some of the trade issues. But I think we need to pay a lot of attention to really whether the broader business community is satisfied with the devil in the detail, basically. Mm-hmm. That's really what it's going to come down to.
The book is Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy. George Magnus joins us on Overnight America. So we have President Obama, and I guess going back to President Bush or Clinton, and you can go far. Big difference in personalities when you have a President Trump in there who's very big into letting everyone know he's going to be the negotiator. He wants to get in there and make sure everyone knows he's going to try to get the best deal he possibly can for the United States. What kind of instability do you see and the changeover in presidents with the way that maybe President Obama handled things, with the way President Trump might be handling things, and even looking forward to the future? Let's say there's another president in the future. Is this just going to be starting from scratch over and over and over again when it comes to China?
My personal view is I don't think it would be. I think because this is not just a White House phenomenon, because obviously what the president is articulating with his senior staff are issues that are shared by the Democrats. So this is a kind of a beltway phenomenon, mm-hmm. and it's not just a beltway phenomenon. It's also, I think, a Western phenomenon, because what we're also seeing is that in Britain, in Germany, in South Korea, in Japan, in France, governments are becoming more cagey, I would say, mm-hmm. about the terms under which their companies do business with and in China. And certainly the terms on which Chinese companies look to buy foreign companies when they come to, let's say, the United States or to Europe or to Canada. And we've seen, a very significant drop-off, let's say, in Chinese investment in Western economies in 2018. It's about a third as much as it was in 2017 and 2016. And part of this is, a good part of this really, is because of the, not-for-sale signs, which are basically being erected, particularly over technology companies and other companies which are perhaps sensitive from a military or technological standpoint. So, I don't think that this is something which has got a kind of a presidential cycle, if that's the question you were asking me. Mm-hmm. I think that, whatever happens in 2020 in this country, in your country, I think that it's going to continue as a sort of a theme. I mean, just how much the line between engagement and tension, varies. I mean, that's obviously mm-hmm. difficult to predict. But I do think that the relationship with China that we have in the West now is, you don't say, you never say never or never mm-hmm. say always.
Sure.
But I mean, for the time being, I don't really see it's going to change. I think it's going to remain at an elevated state of tension. And that doesn't mean to say that we can't cooperate with the Chinese in lots of other different areas. But mm-hmm. I think that in these areas of kind of technology in particular and industrial policy, I don't really see an agreement or closure coming about.
Now, I've seen a lot of the tech companies talk about some of the restrictions of how they have to change the way they operate when they go to China. They have special requests. You can't make the government look particularly bad. You can't report in a certain way. You have to block certain things. And some of these big tech companies here in the United States, the Googles and the Facebooks, they go through these ebbs and flows where they try to fight it. And other times they say, well, I don't want to give up the market share because, we're talking about billions of people here. So, then they kind of give in and they go back and forth. And there's a lot of talk about China, not necessarily with the tariffs, but even on the technology side. Do you guys talk about China as much in England like we do here in the United States?
Not as much, because it's obviously not as big an issue for us in the United Kingdom. We are otherwise consumed with something completely different, as many of your listeners probably know, which is
Brexit and all that. Yeah,
which has sucked the oxygen out of almost everything. But it is important, and it is certainly something which the government is starting to take more seriously, partly because if we do leave the EU, if the UK does leave the EU, I mean, some of the politicians are basically very kind of gung-ho about striking up trade deals with, China and other people, and actually it may not be that easy. or desirable in some respects. But we're also very cognizant about the influence and even interference which is starting to come about through agencies of the Chinese government, which, you know, work their way into, you know, academia and business and politics in the UK and other countries, which we've been reading a lot of all over the world, really. So it is starting to become a much more sensitive issue. And why not? Because, after all, you know, it's an important country, it's the second biggest economy in the world, and what happens in China really has ramifications for everybody else nowadays.
Yeah, and we always wonder here, too, the timing of it in our own economy. It's been a little rocky towards the end of 2018. It's starting to stabilize and pick back up 2019. If there were some sort of deal made with China, I'm sure that would have very positive economic indicators or anything that would happen here in the United States afterwards. So a lot of people were asking this. Is this really the right time to tackle a problem like China? There's a lot of things on the United States plate right now. Is this the right time to try to work with China?
Well, you know, I don't think there's ever going to be a right time, because whatever time it was always going to prove to be disruptive. So I agree with you. I think, you know, if there is some semblance of something that we call a deal between now and the 1st of March, I'm sure that the, you know, business confidence would benefit, and the stock market would probably be a little bit cheerier because of that and so on. So it would have some positive spin-offs, but again, you know, the devil will be in the detail as to whether there's anything of substance which really, you know, will improve the dialogue and the relationship between the U.S. and China. And you know, we'll have to wait until that. We can make that judgment a little bit kind of later on in the year, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's you know, there will be some upside, I think, if there is some kind of arrangement, or at least we just need it not to get worse. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. So if President Trump just, you know, continues to freeze the tariffs that would have taken place on the 1st of January, doesn't extend it to the other half of goods imported from the from China. If that kind of status quo persists for this year, then that's probably, you know, from the point of view of business, that's probably a good result. But as I said, I don't think there was ever a good time to basically take issue with China about these matters. But I think it's true to say, I really believe it is fair to say, that somebody had to do it sometime, and we just, you know, we have to hope that it's managed well, but the consequences are things that are really important. So, I think, you know, we need to persevere with this.
Oh, man. I think that is a lot of people's motto here in the United States. Just don't get worse, please. Don't get worse.
I think that's probably right.
Universal, almost. Red Flags, Why Geez China is in Trouble, author George Magnus. If someone wants to check out your book and all the research you've done, where can people find you?
Well, I have a website, which is www.georgemagnus.com. And, of course, the book's available at Amazon and other online booksellers. So,
Red Flags. That's an important look into American history. And if we want to look at some of the big deals that President Trump has tried to tout, this could be the biggest one for sure. Well, of course, with North Korea being one of their neighbors, could tie right into it. Thank you so much, George Magnus, for coming on to Overnight America.
My great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And he joins us on the Quiver River electric guest line. Pretty fascinating stuff there. He says that, you know, you never know. You just never know. Really, that's the answer to everything. I don't know. I got a whole stack of stuff here I didn't get a chance to get to. Doesn't that seem to be the case every single night? In the next hour, we're going to do a couple of different things. You've seen some of the reports come out about what's going to happen next with this wild weather we're seeing. We'll get highs in the 40s by this weekend. You know, you're going to see overnight lows in the single digits, so more chances of snow coming up. AccuWeather meteorologist Matt Rindy will come up here in about 10 minutes from now. At 2:06, and I also want to talk about snow in general, property owners getting fined for not shoveling, and we'll hear part of our interview with Ned O'Gorman, who's got a book out that looks at the secret Hollywood studio. Ooh, secret Hollywood studios. and get a little spoiler alert. I do want to talk to him about the potential of this studio filming and faking the moon landing. Another spoiler alert. They didn't fake the moon landing. But all of these things you can find online, which is something we do as a service to you. Wherever you get your podcasts, you could just click a button and listen to anything we've done on the radio program. Absolutely free, on demand, the way you like it. If you don't know what your favorite podcast app is, I can recommend the radio.com podcast app right there at the radio.com one. Search for Overnight America, and you'll be able to check that out. And better yet, you can just go to KMOX.com. I mean, if you're just, I don't got a smartphone, but I still like to listen when I'm at work or whatever it is, you can always do that by going to KMOX.com in the podcast section. Just search for Overnight America there or any of our other great shows here on KMOX. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. You could reach me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.